Welcome back to the Mind of Monty podcast with your host, Monty G, and I, Mo. Today's episode, we're going to give you an update on the New Japan Cup bracket. We're going to talk about the fallout of AEW's Revolution and some holy bleep moments from this week, as well as our well-received chat segment this week. How are you feeling today?
I'm good. You know, it's been an exciting time, especially from someone like me who loves the New Japan Cup. I talk about these tournaments in New Japan all the time. So far, if you've been listening to this show, I know you know. I definitely big up and always try to shout out the G1 and talk about how much I love that. And I've even made people who didn't know anything about New Japan fans of it because of the G1. So I know how special that time of year is. But the New Japan Cup is just as, if not better, in my opinion, because of the presentation of it, the pacing of it. It's way easier to understand. I think you can get newer fans involved in it a lot easier because it's like just a regular, you know, one match type of deal, you know, not round robin. So it's just one of those type of things where I think it's a little bit more palatable for that Western mind state.
Oh, yeah, it goes by faster.
Yeah, and that too is that it's not really a drag. Like, for example, it started March 5th this year. It's going to be over on the 21st. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that sounds like they're probably going to be doing a lot of stuff together, but they've actually paced these cards out rather well. It hasn't been a lot of back-to-back shows other than, like, the anniversary show that was right after the March 5th show. So, but like I was saying, this is an exciting time of year for me. So I'm in a really good mood, you know, watching the cup, trying to see who will be challenging Okada next. But at the same time, just looking at all the little budding new storylines. You know, New Japan used the New Japan Cup to set up a lot of things, not only Sakura Genesis, which will probably be the next big event, I think, but it just sets up a lot of, you know, just what's going to be happening for the rest of the year. Who's going to be feuding with each other at least this quarter of the year. So it's a very exciting time.
Some people to keep your eyes on.
Going forward, yeah.
Yes, going forward. So I agree. So let's get into it. Let's start with the New Japan update. Again, like you said, it started on the 5th of March. And do you want to just briefly talk about the matches before the actual cup matches? Or should we just get into the cup matches?
We're just going to get into the cup because the only notable thing from a lot, even though it was some great tag matches and great interactions, it will come into play after we talk about kind of like David Finley. So I just kind of lumped that in.
Okay, cool beans. All right, so we had Sonata versus Taichi. Both of us felt as though Sonata was going to get kicked out of the first round because he's been on a bit of a losing streak. However, Tai Chi, being the motivational speaker that he is, reawakened something in Sonata to his detriment now. So Sonata did pick up that victory against Tai Chi to go on and face Kenta tomorrow.
And I think you said motivational speaker, but he's not speaking. He said a little bit. He did give him a few words of like, you know, this all you got, stuff like that. But nah, he spoke with his strikes. You know, it was a couple of kicks to the face that really woke Sonata up. And like you said, I talked a lot of shit about Sonata and Kevin Kelly and Chris also talked shit about him and mentioned that Sonata right now is the cold skull on a cold streak. And I'm just like, wow, like that's how bad it was. His struggles from last year. And even though he won at one point this year, he still was on like a losing streak this year. So again, he was having a tough time. I thought it was a big opportunity for Taichi. You know, he's the leader of his own group now, even though they don't really have a leader, they say, because they're just four guys. But still, you know, Taichi is definitely the front man. I just thought it would be a great opportunity, and I was interested to see who would actually win. And if you've been watching New Japan, you know these two have a really great kind of like sibling rivalry where you can tell they really appreciate each other, specifically after they fight. But while they're fighting, they try to pull out the, you know, I guess the best or the worst, depending on how you want to look at it, in each other. And he woke Sonata up. Like you said, everybody knows Sonata cold, doesn't really get too high or too low. But man, he really was fired up and really this is a really incredible match. And a thing that helped it, in my opinion, was me mentioning again how both of them needed this. You know, and that's what it felt like. It just felt like, because, you know, and if Sonata, you know, he survived, but if Sonata ends up fighting like this, he can win the entire tournament. I think that's what we all know. That's kind of like why it was so hard on him for the losing streak. You know, I know he's only been a U.S. champion. He didn't get a chance to have that long, but Sonata is very, very capable of being, I mean, he's beaten Okada in the past. He's come very close to beating Okada plenty of times, too. So, you know, for him to finally get over that hump and possibly be mentioned next to Okada is something that I think me and you both want to see for Sonata. So that's why we're kind of hard on him when things are not going as well. But, you know, after the match, they kind of showed respect to each other, you know, and kind of shook hands. And, you know, people are definitely mentioning, even Chris kind of said Sonata would be a great fit in Just Four Guys, you know, and maybe it would be. He would be a great fit.
Then you'd have to change the name.
Obviously, you have to change the name, right? But I must say that Sonata, you know, as he turned down Tai Chi's fist bump, basically in his own way, Sonata's probably never going to leave LIJ. Now, maybe I'm setting myself up. And you guys can all make fun of me, use this soundbite against me when it does go the other way. But I don't know. He just fits so perfectly with Naito. They're good friends. And Sonata is just not only that. I think he's still able to be who he is under LIJ. Not saying he wouldn't be able to be who he is in another group. I just don't know how that would even look. I can't even really fathom it. You know, how it would look.
Because LIJ lets him have so much freedom to do as much or as little as he wants to do.
He doesn't have to talk. Like, you know, by the way, Sonata won this match in the main event and just left.
He did.
Did not say anything to the crowd. Left Tai Chi in the ring to talk to the crowd. So,
and if he took up people like Tanahashi.
Yeah, Tanahashi's offered. Like, a lot of people has been trying to get him out of LIJ for a while.
Then it would have to, to be honest with you, I don't think Sonata wants all of the pressure of having to lead a faction.
That's fair. I mean, can you lead it silently? Can you silently lead a faction? That's a good question.
But he's way too laid back.
He's trying to deal with the this and that,
of who's a member, who not a member.
Yeah, I figured it out though. Evil got out. I got out of it because he got Dick Togo. You got that's what needs. Sonata needs an older figure to come do it for him. You know, and Muto just left, so I don't know about that. But even like they said, even his mannerism, Sonata. Sometimes you look at him and he's just like, damn, he's a Muto clone at times. Like, I don't know, man. I think if Sonata was to leave LIJ, he'd probably leave and just do his own thing.
Be a rogue.
It's just like something, right? It's just like some mythical figure just. I'm not saying the great Sonata is coming back.
That's not how it works.
But exactly. That's not usually how it works. You got to have someone on your side, usually. Yeah. Yeah.
It's better that he has LIJ on his side. People who understand and accept him for who he is.
Yeah. Tai Chi deserved to win this match, though. I'm sorry. He deserves to finally win in these spots. But I can't complain with the way that match turned out. It was it had drama. The fans were screaming their ass off. It was decisive. And I didn't even mention this. Sonata has a new finish. He doesn't have a name for it, but the fact that he didn't finish, he did not only do Black Mephisto, he did Skull In again, and then, you know, Tachi kicked out of two moonsaults, by the way. So I guess that's when you realize, you know what, maybe I need to try something new, right? But Sonata dropped him with, it kind of looked like the DDT that Andrade does as a finish. So a fellow ungovernable. I love it.
Fair.
But yeah, that was a special, special match.
And again, we're excited to see Sonata versus Kenta. Now, I don't think there's going to be any camaraderie after their match.
Yeah. No love, most likely. No.
Exactly. Next up, we have Naito taking on and defeating El Phantasmo on the same night.
Yeah. Again, this is an opportunity for the heavyweight El Phantasmo to prove himself.
He is not a heavyweight.
He's now a heavyweight. Yes, he is. He's fighting as a heavyweight. Yes.
Oh, he is not a heavyweight. Look at that. But he is scrawny.
Oh, first of all, he's obviously put on weight. He's not putting on the weight the same way Zach has, but it's very similar. Like, to where he's kind of like bulking up, not necessarily, but But I'm not saying he's still not lanky. He's still lanky, kind of like Zach is. But if you look at what Zach was a few years ago, he's way thicker now. I think the same thing is happening to El Phantasmo. He's a little pudgier. That maybe.
Zach, you can see his thighs start rubbing.
Yeah, you see Zach's thighs has gotten huge. Exactly. ELP, he still kind of looks lanky and scrawny. And I get it. And to be fair, he was always a tall Super Junior, so it probably wasn't that hard for him to put on a few extra pounds.
It's fair.
To become a heavyweight.
But when you compare him to somebody like Mark Davis, you're not finna sit here and call him a heavyweight.
True. But again, that's where his height comes in. Height means weight, fool. And that's what I'm trying to get you to understand.
Okay, he can.
They're not that far away, even though I see what you're saying. He's scrawnier. But again, this is... He's fighting in the heavyweight division. So when I say that, he's fighting heavyweights. That's what
okay,
I mean.
Okay.
He's no longer just a junior. But anyway, so.
Allegedly, but all right.
But again, against one of the established best in New Japan, he stepped up big time. ELP is not all comedy. He's not just a junior heavyweight. He's not just flippy stuff or whatever some people may have thought about him in the past. He is a really special talent to me. I love everything ELP does. The fans at Corkin Hall started to chant ELP and chant El Fantasmo. And we know, again, they love Naito. Naito hasn't lost there since 2016. And they were chanting Naito too. But like once they started to chant both for both guys, that's when you really realize you're witnessing a special performance. ELP looked like a very big star after this match to me. He got a round of applause afterwards. Like, and, you know, Naito only won that because he outsmarted him with, like, the flash pin, the roll-up, you know, there towards the end. But ELP was literally on his way, and it almost looked like he had this match won a couple of times. So, again, Naito outsmarted him and won. And as for him, you know, if he don't lose in the first round, going off history, like Kevin Kelly mentioned a couple times, he usually is going to be in there a while. And he did not lose here, so... You know,
he ain't gonna be in that long.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. It was a hell of a match to kick the cup off, and then now you get to see what Chase Owens will do against Tetsuya Naito. And you know, I'm very interested in that match because as much as my mind is saying, oh, Naito has this in the bag. This is the New Japan Cup. All it takes is one, you know, victory, and you know, all it takes is one package pile driver, you know, a distraction, whatever it takes, and Chase could definitely still pull this off the same way he upset Tanahashi last year. And if it's one thing about this cup, beware, anybody can be taken down,
and the ally allegiance has changed. So we'll start by going into the anniversary show. 51 years in New Japan. They started off the cup matches with Shota Umino picking up a victory against Yujiro, which we kind of expected.
I don't know about kind of. But yeah, I think anyone who knows anything about New Japan expected Yujiro to let us down once again.
Is it letting us down?
Yeah, it's not really let down. Everyone, he's house torture. So, no, he's actually doing his job greatly by losing because we don't want house torture.
We don't want you here.
But, yeah, man, this match ended up being fine. My only complaint about it is Yujiro at this point. You know, I'm just in. I don't know if he fits these big tournaments, these big spots. You know, a lot of time when he's in there, you know the result. And again, I get it in big tournaments like the G1 because guys like him, Yano, some of these other people that don't really ever win, but they always seem to have a slot in these tournaments, they're usually used as a great way to help wrestlers pace themselves. And, you know, so it's still a match, but you know it won't be as long. You know it won't be as physical, and you're more likely going to win. So it's a win-win kind of type of thing, having those people in there.
But it's kind of like a bye week.
Right, but as far as the New Japan Cup goes, since it's just one match anyway for the most part, you know, no one believes Yujiro was going to beat, you know, Shota at this point, even though Shota is still newly established. As a matter of fact, if Yujiro would have pulled this off, I think we all would have been complaining otherwise. Just like, what the hell Yujiro need to win this match for? So, anyway, that's pretty much my only complaint that I had. You know, Sho could have been better suited if you need someone from House of Torture to be in this spot. I know he's a junior heavyweight, but honestly, I'd probably be more excited to see Shota versus Sho, even though I guess this version of Sho is nowhere near the Sho I'm thinking about when I say that, you know, because
Side note, does that mean Best of Super Juniors is coming next month? I thought it was usually in May. It might still be in May.
I had to check the schedule.
Yeah.
It's the only way I know for sure.
I'll check the schedule.
I don't necessarily know. Like, the pandemic threw off a lot of my usual dates. I'm not sure. But like I was saying, Shoulda survived the House of Tortures BS. And again, you said it was kind of expected. I just put it was expected. but it was still entertaining. And the crowd was into it, which, again, that says it all in this situation. Especially now that we have crowd noise and all of that back in New Japan. And we're going to get Shota versus Zack Sabre Jr. out of this on the 15th. So
it's going to be interesting.
It's a big positive.
Okay. Back to what I was saying earlier about Allegiance's switching David Finley, who was formerly of the
Hantai
locker room, came out with Gato at his side with black hair that looks very trashy on him, if I must say. Basically saying that he is with the Bullet Club. He debuted as a member or possible leader, we don't know, of the Bullet Club against Ishii and picked up the victory to go on to face the Great Okan later this month.
Yeah, and like, you know, again, not only he did take out Jay White at Battle in the Valley, so I guess I did figure it was leading somewhere. I actually called this would be the new, I said new leader, but like you mentioned, nothing has been confirmed, but seeing Gato there kind of makes you feel like, yeah, he's definitely the one. And
Chase
said
him and Fale said he's the guy.
He's the guy. And the thing is about Gato is they mentioned this a lot in this match. His track record speaks for itself. He followed around Okada. He followed around Jay White. You know, what are those two guys? Champions, successful, they win. And that's what David Finley was going to have to do here. So, I knew big things were going to happen for Finley with the way with him doing that to Jay White. But, again, it was still a little shock. And I love the story, too, because if you know anything about his relationship with Jay White, he hated Jay White the entire time. And I love that it's a nice twist to it. He didn't hate Jay White because he was this good guy and thought Jay White was a piece of trash or anything. He hated Jay White because they were in the same class. And while they were Young Lions, Jay White beat his ass. When they both became regular members, Jay White would beat his ass.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Bullet Club, you know, whether it was cheating, he beat him one time finally last year. But Jay White usually would win. So he literally hated Jay White so much that when Jay White decided to leave, he became Jay White almost in a way. Or he hated him so much to where he's like, because again, he did mention this. You have control of this. You got the keys to this company and you really giving it up. And that's ungrateful. What, you know, yeah, it's ungrateful. Exactly. That's how he looked at him. So again, I love that kind of twist of him kind of being, you know, hating a man so much to where he almost has come a character of him in a way. And I also love the fit of his nickname. I mean, he was the Rebel even when he was in Hantai. But the Rebel definitely fits way better with Bullet Club than it does with the babyface locker room, if we're being honest.
What are you rebelling against, Dave?
Exactly. Especially if you're just a babyface. Like, it's 100% the thing. So, it fits. It really does fit. Or the Outcast, I think, is another name he's going with. They even mentioned that he felt like an outcast in his time in America because they would look at him and see his dad's name, think Irish. He would go to Ireland and they wouldn't appreciate. They would see American. He went to Japan. He was just outsider altogether. So he joined the biggest club outsider. I like that logic. Again, nice explanation, nice storytelling here for the evolution of him. Even though he does look like a hypocrite because he definitely would say a lot of sleek stuff about Bullet Club. But now we see that was just festering his hatred for
jealousy.
Yeah, and his jealousy and hatred for Jay White. It probably wasn't that he hated the Bullet Club. And, you know, again, Juice Robinson seems to be kind of on the American side of the Bullet Club. You know, working with AEW, probably doing stuff with New Japan Strong. So, again, the relationship there, we all know that's Finn Juice. But even if they're not going to come together under the Bullet Club banner, them being separate and still representing the same club is a nice little nod for us people who was there with those, yeah, who've been on this road with them from day one. So it is kind of cool to still see them secretly
them
on the same side.
Scumbags.
Yeah, right. Both of them are just the worst. Like you said, they go from those happy, you want to have a beer with those guys, to
scumbag.
People that you don't want to hang around with at all. But again, seeing him in his new role, he's fighting Ishii, so you know what this was all about. We're going to see if you really are about all of this stuff you're talking, David Finlay. You know, Ishii do not give a damn. And by the way, if it's one thing Ishii don't like, he hate when someone who was one way decided to join the Bullet Club. Yes. And that's the way he fought Finlay. He fought Finlay like, you got the nerve. You Finlay, you, because like again, a lot of the older Chaos members remember the Young Lion process for a lot of these guys. So it's kind of like when Jay White left Chaos, it's like, you got the nerve to turn on Chaos, you. So again, but anyway,
it's like an extra slap in the face,
right? Ishii always takes it personal. He always takes it personal. He took it personal when Evil left LIJ. They have nothing to do with him.
It did. You don't do that. You don't go about it like that.
Yeah, and like Ishii's formula is just too good to not sit back and enjoy. Finlay was really doing a lot of damage, but Ishii just kept fighting because that's what he does. Obvious, a great brawl. Finlay looked strong here in the end. He set the tone for the next stage of his career. I thought this was awesome.
Exactly. And then again, we got him going against Oka. I'm ready to see it. I hope.
Yeah.
I hope as though Oka will.
And you gotta understand, Oka always toes that line. He's definitely not a good guy, but the people of Japan love him. So, yeah. It's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so on the 8th, a couple nights ago, we had Mark Davis taking on Yano and picking up the victory. And Mark Davis, in a surprise twist to us, is going on to face his faction leader, Will Ospreay.
Right. We definitely predicted that one of these tag team members of Aussie Open would fall. But, you know, as you saw, and I thought maybe this would be the one because Yano is always good for a surprise, but not this time.
No.
Not this time.
Mark was persistent.
Exactly. Not this time. Oh, and Mark, he didn't fall for any trick. Like, exactly. Yano tried everything, and Mark didn't fall.
Him so
he
many
didn't fall
ways.
For nothing, you know. It wasn't a great match to me. By any estimation, but it's always fun to see if Yano's opponent can, you know, will they fall for his tricks? Will he end up finding a way out of this? But like I said, Mark didn't, and he kind of handled him easily after you know, getting through the many tricks of Yano. And he's gonna, you know, like you said, he's gonna be fighting Ospreay. Very, very interesting matchup. This was solid stuff, and I can't wait to see what happens when you kind of have the leader versus, you know, the big man of Aussie Open. I know they're going to kill
him. I thought Jeff was the big man, or Oka.
Big man of Aussie Open. I didn't say the big man of the United.
Gotcha. It's a lot of big men there now that you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
The thing about this match for me is he decided he was going to take Yano's spots from him, like literally. He undid all the turnbuckles, and then when they were taped together, he threw Yano into the ring post. It's like, how... You've been watching film.
Mark knows who he's fighting. Exactly. Yeah.
And I like that. I like the intelligence amongst the wrestler.
Right. I agree.
Okay.
It helped that he had Fletcher coaching. And it helps that the United Empire really supports their, you know, they support their guys. So
yes,
I think that helps.
They're always out there. Last match of the show, we had Ren Narita versus Evil. Now, we were rooting for Ren Narita because Evil's a POS.
Yeah, definitely.
And we had hopes that Ren would do it because they got a little drama. He beat him before. Evil was like, nah, not finna happen. Y'all thought. He picked up the victory, and he's going to go on to face Jeff Cobb on the 13th.
Yeah, man. It's kind of like Yano match in a sense because it's all about whether or not Ren could survive or overcome what the House of Torture does. But you know, it still ended up being compelling because Ren just kept fighting. But, of course, Dick Togo was there and Evil was just too much to overcome together. And I had fun watching this one. Even if I was like the crowd and I hated the result, I have such a love-hate relationship with Evil. Like, it's the only way I really can explain it. I want to see him do good because I really love Evil and, like, the wrestler. And a lot of the stuff that he's done, a lot of his moves are some of my favorite moves in New Japan. But he's, like you said, he's become such a POS and such a shell of the Evil that I used to know.
Yeah. It's weird because we spent 4 years getting to know what we believe is the real Evil.
Right.
And now, in these past 3 years, he's just shown us a completely different side, and it's hard to grasp that reality of what he says is the real evil.
But you can argue that he's way more evil now, so maybe he's right. The collective groan of the audience when he wins says it all. Really, it says it all about the fact that no one wants House of Torture on top. No one. So this was very enjoyable though for me, even if it was marred by the predictable Dick Togo interference.
Fair enough. All right. And as for the cup matches for the last show of the week, this morning we had Kyle Fletcher picking up the victory against Yoshihashi to take on Hirooki Goto on the 12th.
Yeah, it was a really strong match. I was rooting for Yoshihashi. You heard me, and the crowd was really into it because Yoshihashi showed some fantastic heart. He survived a lot of big spots from Fletcher. It was just felt like a showcase for what Fletcher really can do and how he looks outside of tag team competition. He has massive potential, by the way. Kyle Fletcher can definitely be a star in New Japan anywhere, honestly. He's young, but he is an incredible wrestler already. So by the end, I was just really impressed with what he can do. And like you said, Kyle Fletcher pinned a tag champion. So looking back, even whether he gets the victory over Goto or not, we will be getting Aussie Open versus Bishamon at some point, I'm assuming, down the line for those belts. But yeah, man, Jeff Cobb on commentary, by the way, made it even better. This was good.
I agree. Last match of the night, we had Aaron Hanare picking up a surprising, shocking victory
in Shingo's home prefecture.
In Shingo's home land.
Right.
His home turf. To go on and face Tama Tonga on the 12th. Like,
a lot of Shingo tiles was in that crowd too, by the way, man. They were hurt. A lot.
And the so hurt. The interesting thing is, I knew that Hanare won because I followed him on Instagram. And when you said, if I had beat Shingo, I would be gloating. I was like, maybe he is. He was. He was, in fact, gloating all on his story.
As he should have been.
He was having the time of his life. I don't know if he met up with Oka later to go celebrate the way Oka likes to celebrate, but he was definitely celebrating. And it's good to see Hanare doing this because we know Hanare from when he was Toa and we was rooting for him and he kept losing, and then the whole gimmick switch.
And even with the Empire, he still would be the one who would lose. So again, this was a big moment for him. And it's really dope for Shingo to allow him to have. I know it's not like American wrestling where you got people with their egos and, you know, trying to creative control. I don't know how that even works in Japan. I'm pretty sure someone in Japan has had creative control over
Shingo
the years,
thinks
baby.
He's got creative control the way he walk around acting like he's not.
Well, see, that's
the
different. They all just talk to the New Japan office. No one has creative control because Okada, even as you can see, I told you, he told them that he's not coming to that show. What Okada did, he wrestled in that show. Exactly.
Interesting thing is, we talked about how Sonata was on a bit of a losing streak, but Shingo is too. He lost to Okada. He won KOP. But he lost to Okada, and now he's lost to Hanare.
Yeah, but I mean, losing to Okada don't count. Now the streak is really now it might be a streak. Losing to Okada is like, all right.
He talked all that trash though.
I'm just saying, I can't say he's on a bad streak yet. Now if he loses to another big match after Hanare, I'm like, okay, now it's something to watch. But losing to Okada at this point is a given. But yeah, man. Even after Hanare's victory in the tag matches leading up to this one, I wasn't sure that he could win the actual match, especially in Shingo's hometown. But, you know, he unleashed a beating on Shingo. Shingo's throwing back predictably. It was physical. It was great striking exchanging that I've come to expect, really, from both of these guys. I was planning on typing because, again, as I was watching the match, I was typing my notes. And I was planning on typing that eventually Hanare would win these matches one day, right? But as soon as I was getting ready to type that, he dropped it with Streets of Rage. And he actually did it. He actually had the biggest win of his career. I said the Tanahashi victory last year was the biggest win. Hanare beating Shingo, this version of Shingo right now, even bigger, right? Honestly, for this kid. I can't even say kid at this point. I've watched him develop into the mustached man that he is now.
Please do something. Grow a beard. That's my only critique. Grow a beard, please.
But right now, the United Empire, they just look impossibly good. 6 out of the 16 people that are left in this tournament are from the Empire. Somebody from the Empire is probably going to make the final. Okay? It's just the ratio is just not good for everybody else. Somebody is going to be left standing, whether it's Will or whether it's Jeff. So, I mean, we got Okan coming up, like we said, haven't even seen him wrestle. So, everyone is at least in the second round who was competing in this tournament. Everyone from the United Kingdom only one of them is actually from the United Kingdom.
Yes.
But the United Empire, their whole entire faction of people who were competing in this tournament is in the second round. So, big, you know, all I can say to that is crowns up. Crowns up, man. Throw the crowns up. Anyway, Hanare, can he beat Tama Tonga? Because, again, that'll be the one. Like, as good as this victory is, this is a big one. And maybe he could get a KOPW shot, as a matter of fact. So maybe this is a big one, too. But if he can get this one, he can also get a, you know, he can tell Tama, yo, let me get a shot at your belt. So I can't wait to see what happens. And I must say, this was good shit from both guys. So, yeah, man, great, great stuff so far. The first show that we will be reviewing next week will be headlined by Sonata and Kenta and Chase and Naito from March 11th. So that'll be the first show I talk about when I catch you guys up on my bracket next week. But as of right now, that's what we have to talk about. As a matter of fact, it's going to be a quick turnaround because the Naito, that March 11th show
is tomorrow.
Tonight, right? Yeah, yeah. Tomorrow morning, I guess. So, yeah, man, we're good on that. But I'm excited. The tournament, obviously, as you can see, has me pumped up. It's just incredible stuff, incredible wrestling, and this was 30 minutes by itself.
It was. We can get on the road with New Japan. Next up, let's just talk briefly about the fallout of Revolution. The main thing, to be honest, is the TNT title changed hands twice.
Yeah, at Revolution.
In the span of four days, 5 days, 3 days. Mm-hmm.
At Revolution, and then again on Dynamite.
Yes. So, what was the reason? To quote Cardi B, what was the reason?
From what I've heard, Powerhouse Willie was the long term. That was supposed to be the plan. But again, it's just why we go through this convoluted Wardlow, then Joe, then Darby, then Joe, back to Wardlow, now to Willie.
Right. It's
make it make sense. But hey, I've seen, very promiscuous belt at this point. Hopefully it has a new
belt's got a lot of bodies.
Partner to stick around for a while again. Hopefully, you know, hopefully don't run back to Sammy Guevara again. Or, you know, so many other people that may be right back in this title hunt because the TNT title loves the fellas. Also, interesting stuff from, that I want to mention, new trios champions. Shout out to the, if you didn't know, I predicted, if you guys haven't realized, I predicted Revolution perfectly, right? You know what I mean? Shout out to the House of Black.
I don't know.
I'm about to call them the House of Torture.
You just talked about them. Do I need to have you do like a home drug screen?
Why?
Because you and Tony were on the same wavelength, and you know how he is.
No, I don't. You don't need to do anything for me. Someone probably need to check him out because usually we are so far off base that I look like a horrible predictor. I think what happened here, though, the reason why we seem to be on the same wavelength is that he even realized most of these storylines need to be done. So let me just cap them off now. And I think that's what happened. Ruby joined up with Saraya and, you know, Tony, and she kind of gave a great explanation on Dynamite, but I will say it doesn't really, the explanation, while it was a great promo, it made me feel like it was premeditated. And I just want to rewind and say, if it was premeditated, again, Ruby, if this was as premeditated as it sounded in your promo, why in the hell did you and Saraya just fucking screw Jamie?
I agree.
Neither one of you could decide to be champion? What the hell happened?
Like I said, I think I was just randomly in the store. I'm not finna team up with somebody that was just whooping my ass 5 minutes ago just because I took a
right. Pen. It's such a quick turnaround, man. But, you know, whatever. But also, I just want to give props before I move on to the next part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Great Iron Man match. Shout out to Max and Danielson. I know that Meltzer gave Danielson his highest rated match of his career because of this. But honestly, who gives? I don't care about that. I just want to let everybody know that, you know, if you didn't know, Danielson is one of the greatest of all time, easily. And he just added to that. And then he also made another guy look like, if he isn't the greatest, look like he will be one of the greatest champions of all time. So this was it was a great, great match. And then Max won very, very, you know, questionably, as we predicted. So again, I was just on the money. I just wanted to pat myself on the back. Give me a pop. Thank you. All right.
All right. For all the adulation we're giving Tony, now it's time to disrespect him. I felt a way when we were predicting this.
Not only you, a lot of female. I'm just gonna say a lot of the females I talked to who are also fans of AEW. Go ahead.
Because time and time again, the TBS champion is not on these big match cards. Or if she is, there are matches with no story whatsoever. She had to go out here. She has to go out here week after week in these dope outfits for a 5-minute interview. Not even 5 minutes, for a 2-minute interview. Just to be like, all right, who's next? I don't want 53 matches. Give me something. Like, she's begging at this point for something.
Or actual storyline is, I think, is more so what she's hungry for. And also, I think the thing is, I think this is the problem. This is when it looks bad. It looks bad, Tony, when you have matches that, like that match that was in the 0 hour. As much as I love seeing the Lucha Bros and Mark Briscoe and all of that, pointless match. Or the tag team title match that had no story that was on this card. Definitely could have preferred having a TBS title match in this spot, or, you know, something like that. So again, it really, really makes the point even stronger when you have other matches that literally you can't find a purpose for, but when you have a champion right here with no contender, no storyline. And yes,
and Britt Baker's not doing nothing.
Right. I mean, she's obviously active in the hater story and all that, but yeah, again, it's plenty of other people that it just sends off. It also gives off that message. And this is what happens when you have a lot of title belts in the division. Like, you have a lot of, and I get it. I saw some people who already made the argument that maybe they're waiting on Stat. And I'm just like, well, Stat got a serious injury. Like, you can't have someone sitting around with nothing to do but the same thing over and over again just because you're waiting on Statlander to return. Like, that, you have to come up with better, you know, plan B's than that. Hopefully, where they're heading with this Canadian, whoever the Canadian challenger will be, hopefully it's a little bit more creative than what they've been doing usually. But I don't know. I don't have the highest hopes for it. We'll see. But yeah, Jade has been talking about it slowly but surely, and a lot of other people definitely made note of it when you looked at the card and just saw, especially with this build. Most of these matches that was on Revolution were not built up great, or at least a lot of these builds people were tired of. So I'm not saying they should have added a fresh just match for nothing onto Revolution, because again, that would have only got people complaining even more, because it just would have been a squash match that would seem out of place. But again, we're just saying, give her something to sink her teeth into. Like, the Nyla Rose stuff was fine, but I don't think she's done anything prominent. I mean, I guess maybe the Red Velvet stuff. Like, that's it. The Red Velvet stuff and kind of the way her baddies have kind of imploded was the last thing she's really done.
The thing is,
been a while.
With the baddies and that implosion, they could have drugged this on to Revolution, but they just have such a quick turnaround with her that they don't give her a story. But we can see Jericho.
Plenty of stories that go way too long.
Yeah, it's so, going on for months. So it's like, why can't you continue a story with her? But she just beat them and then that's it. Like, no, I wanna see Red Velvet and what the hell was her name?
Kiara Hogan.
Kiara Hogan, thank you. I knew it started with a K. I couldn't get it. I want to see them team up to face Jade and her and extend that out. And then they have a match. And then those two people decide. I don't want to keep seeing, and this is going to sound real disrespectful, I don't want to keep seeing Athena wrestling on Dark and having more of a story with Willow than,
it's true,
than what Jade has.
And I get that. But I was just about to make that point too. I'm saying they never fleshed out and built up and created storylines for one women's division. So the first mistake is when you got all these other champions and when you make a second women's title, but you haven't even learned how to make a compelling multiple, because they can do one. They do a pretty good job at one compelling women's story at a time, but they can't really do multiple women's stories at a time consistently. So it's like, why would you make three different women, you know, title divisions?
Right.
When you don't even have a strong enough card to give each woman a contender that everyone, right, a contender and a story. And, you know, again, it's just a cluster. It's a cluster when you think about it. And it seems like she gets the short end of the stick because of, like you said, the streak and because of all these things that honestly, it's not really her fault. She shouldn't be stifled from a storyline because of being undefeated. You know what I'm saying?
Or whatever injury reason to another wrestler that you have, whatever excuse like, you have.
Yeah, whatever reason that you have, you just have to do better. At the end of the day, the women's division have to be treated better consistently. That's what I'm saying. They've done great things. That's not to say they don't have great women's matches and great women's encounters already and all that stuff. But like you mentioned, there's too many times where we see great or even really good women's wrestlers that's just doing something on Dark or just doing this and doing that, and then Jade is literally begging for a fresh opponent. And I'm not saying it has to be Athena or Willow or whatever, because she has beaten both of them.
She has.
But that's my point.
It's people like
you're running out of people to fight, and you're avoiding a couple of women that it's obvious that you're avoiding. Put her in there with Britt. It's obvious that you're avoiding the Sheeta encounter or whatever.
Or even Toni Storm, because again, Tony's just a supporting player in this whole.
No one else wants the TBS
for the title situation. But again,
and that's the problem. Like where have you ever heard anyone they're talking about? Oh, this is for one number one contender shot at TBS championship or whatever. No,
they don't.
They don't do it like that, like, usually.
And you would think, oh, they're scared of her, but no. But they're going for another title, or they're
more concerned with this.
Who's more homegrown than Jade Cargill as far as the AEW like powerhouse system?
And maybe eventually that could be a avenue in this storyline. Like I said, I'm trying to give them a chance because they have opportunities to build up and include her in this too if they wanted to.
But just know I'm watching. I'll do what you say. I'll give them time. But if the minute that I see that, what's the next pay-per-view? Double or Nothing? By Double or Nothing, if I don't see some progress,
she'll be on that card.
She'll be on the card, but I want to see some progress in this storytelling and the caliber of her match seriousness. Like, I don't think they take her matches seriously, and I don't like that.
And again, that's fine while she was establishing herself, because you got to think about it. She is really green by comparison to a lot. That don't mean she isn't ready to prove herself, because I think she's already voiced that she's ready. But again, at the beginning, you can understand how they were doing it because we knew it was a process to this. But as she's, again, not only is she over 50, but like the level of competition has continued to go up. So now it's like, now I need stories to get people invested in it.
Yes.
More than just being, who's going to finally beat Jade Cargill? I mean, again, that's such a, you know. It's a simple story.
Yeah,
and at some point, she is going to lose. And I do think that it needs to be the right person. But you can't let the people's investment in what's going on just die off to where you don't even have a champion on a card. Not even on the Rampage before or something. Or, you know what I'm saying?
She was just at home.
I don't know. But anyway, I'm leaving it alone. Because, like, we can go forever on stuff like that.
We can.
You've already stretched this longer.
So many grievances. I said quickly. next up, we have some holy sugar honey iced tea moments. Or not some, just one. One holy sugar honey iced tea moment from this week. We finally got inside of Jey Uso's head. He finally took some time and decided, like, where he wanted to be, where his allegiances lie. And he chose correctly, in my opinion.
Yeah, man, he stuck with blood. I think at the end of the day, it wouldn't have made any sense. As much as it may have made people feel good, like, oh, he's finally. Only way you can make it make sense is he got a beef with Roman, and we know. But I feel like the way he's doing it, like, for example, the execution of that stuff Monday, just incredible. Like, just go watch it. It's no point in me even trying to break it down. It was just executed really, really well. The crowd was on their feet. And then they were also shocked or, you know, disappointed in Jay, I guess, when he did the inevitable, even though we expected it. Because, again, as much as at the end of the day, if it's one thing Jay Uso has been consistent about, it's been about not only family, but more specifically his brother. So, you know, he was going to always have Jimmy's back. And if Jimmy had a problem with Sammy because of the way things went, Jay was going to have that problem. The only thing that made it conflicted, or in my opinion, the reason why he needed to take so much time is because he don't like Roman. And I think we all know that Jay is the one that he, at the end of the day, if the bloodline is ever going to go anywhere, if they're ever going to go away, it's going to be because Jay Uso finally said, I'm done just, you know, I'm done with this God complex. Yeah, I'm done with all of this stuff. And it's going to have to be Jay. It's the only way the bloodline will go away. Roman can probably lose his belts at Mania or whatever and all that stuff, but I don't think the bloodline goes away until Jay Uso stands up pulls Solo out of it. Because that's one thing that Jay can do in this situation. Like, what does he do when all three of his family members are like, yeah, what do you do with the three brothers besides, we ain't playing with you because
you just a cousin.
Right. Yeah, we're not playing around with this no more. Like what do you do? And I think maybe that's what I'm hoping for subconsciously. It don't have to be a Mania. I don't care when it is. It's just at some point down the line, I would love Jey Uso to finally get some type of revenge for the way his cousin treated him and played with his mind.
Was it two or three years ago, we watched that man choking his brother out.
Exactly. He never will forget that.
Like, that man was traumatized.
Right. And I think somebody was talking about how when he hugged Sammy, he kind of whispered in his ear something, and that's what kind of pumped Sammy up and made Sammy think. So maybe he did say something like, I'm going to be the one to take Roman down. But he meant that I'm going to take him down my way from the inside.
Yes.
Because that's probably the better way to try to do it anyway. Instead of fighting him and your brothers, let me try to get my brothers on my side.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I'm saying? If we're going to take him down, we'll take him down our way.
Let's do a coup.
Exactly.
I'm all behind a coup.
I'm behind it too. Because it makes so much sense. It makes sense that no one would be able to touch this family as long as they're together. But as soon as they splinter, or as soon as Jay be like, nah, I'm sick of this, now the bloodline is done. I would like that. But again, it was beautifully executed. Great stuff. Like everybody's been saying, cinema. It is very, very similar. It is definitely our stories. Us wrestling fans, all my soap opera people out there, that's what this is for us. This is our stories, man. Whenever the bloodline and the beautiful come home. Or whatever, come up with whatever soap opera name you want. Whenever it comes on, we are completely invested. It was beautiful stuff.
I agree. All right. We'll wrap up this podcast by talking on our what I've poorly, boringly titled in my notes, the chat segment. So we're just going to have a chat. This past week, I was doing group with the patients in the rehab or the lifestyle medicine program, and one thing that kept coming up is just growing and giving yourself space to grow, how far you've grown in the past X amount of weeks. And since it's March, you know, spring is around the corner, growth is something that you kind of tend to reflect on this time of year. So for me personally, as y'all know, I am pregnant. So I've just, over the past 5 or 6 weeks, I guess, I've just noticed, one, the growth of my belly, and two, just the change or the growth in my mindset as it pertains to becoming a mother, and how my life will look in the next X amount of years. And being able to accept things that I usually in the past would have caused me unnecessary stress, unnecessary anxiety, things that are not in my control. But I've learned and I've grown as a person enough to just accept any outcome and all outcomes and accept that things are not 100% in my control, which is hard to do because, you know, I'm a control freak most of the time. But I just to continue on. And again, I think it's because I was born in the springtime too. So that's why, like, it's easy for me to think about how I plan on growing as a person in the future, or how I've grown as a person, because that's something that's just at the back of my mind. So like in the future, again, until the baby gets here, at least I plan on continuing to keep the stress low, continuing to be open-minded and expansive in my thought process about things, because it's never good to be closed-minded or narrow-minded. You have to be open-minded in anything, really, not just in your career, but just in life in general, because you never know when the thing that you would normally say no to is really what takes you down the path that you need to be down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think where that comes from too is you need time to reflect. You know, I think growth can't be done, or it can't be noticed, without reflecting on how things were. And I think that's basically what happens. And I think even from a, like you said, from a motherly standpoint, you look at things that, you know, when you talk to not only your mom, but just in general, things, motherly type of things that you may have thought about but just didn't give a second thought because it wasn't relevant to you. Mm-hmm. Now you look at it a little bit differently. You think about things a little bit deeper. You know, I like I said, the growth that it's gonna take for me personally, as a as someone who's gonna not only be a parent now, it's just everything about this is gonna be new. You know, we're gonna have to grow in a new place, most likely. You know, we're gonna have everything around us is gonna be new and different, and things are gonna change. And I'd like to think I'm way more accepting of change now that I've been through a few changes. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm still resistant. At heart, I'm still resistant, but I think the Monty of a few years ago wouldn't have been able to make the move that I'm about, not only about to make, but also I wouldn't have been anywhere near prepared for what's about to happen, whether it's having a child, whether it's, you know, our future, whether it's, you know, any of the above. Monty from a few years ago, I've grown enough as a human being to know that the Monty from a few years ago, probably with the amount of stress that I was carrying just for the last few months, or just, I wouldn't say now, because I'm processing things a little differently, but like even like the last few months, the amount of stress I was carrying and the way I was so resistant to things changing, I probably would have killed myself. Mm-hmm. I say that confidently. Not that I thought about it or I had any of that thought process. I just know that person did not react well to when things were out of, not only out of his control, but when he didn't know anything. When I didn't, mm-hmm. when Monty a few years ago didn't know something, I was like out of my mind. I was like a chicken with his head cut off. I was just running around like insane, basically. So the Monty who I am now, that's moved to Arkansas, even though I didn't know anything about it, where we were going or anything. The Monty who's been on a couple flights.
That started a podcast.
The Monty that started a podcast, exactly. All of this, all that type of stuff. You know, the Monty that been through a pandemic, that witnessed the entire state of normalcy shut down. Mm-hmm. And we lose millions of people around the earth, and or just, even if you didn't lose someone, it probably changed your life fundamentally forever, honestly. Mm-hmm. So again, to be someone who survived and seen all of that type of stuff, the one part of me that's afraid is still there, but I think he's slowly but surely getting quieter and quieter, because I got so much experience of it, where it's like, you know, I don't know, it's not much out here I can't survive.
Exactly.
And I think that's the thing you don't know. As long as you're stopping yourself from experiencing things, you don't even know just how strong you really are. And I think that's what it is. You have to go through, you have to grow, and you have to be able to reflect and know that just, you know, I don't know, man. I probably wouldn't have done it this way then. But now, you know what I'm saying? And you have to appreciate that. That's what I'm saying. Like, take the time to appreciate the way you look at things and like how differently they are. You know, a few months, again, when you told me you were pregnant, it was all woe is me for a while. It was all, everything is going to change. I only got this amount of time to do it. Well, now we're almost there, man. We're almost at the finish line. The baby's going to be here. It's too late to sit here and worry. Now it's about doing. And I think that's the biggest change for me. I always liked to be a person who thought before he acted, thought before he spoke, all that type of thing. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. You definitely still should do that. But I think you don't. I think I should focus less on the thoughts and the outcomes that's in my brain and actually experience it. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time, getting on a plane a few years ago, the many thoughts, the outcomes, I was afraid, terrified. I hate airports. I hate a lot of people. I been through an airport multiple times. Hell, I went through one of the busiest airports. Probably was a generous time period by comparison. I'm pretty sure it'll be hell if we were on a holiday. We went through LAX. It was an actual holiday, Christmas yeah. time, and so I knew it probably hell, right? But I went through that, and it was fine. I actually was mad that people complained so much because ours was so easily. But again, the point is, I had to experience that to grow. I had to know. I had to go out there, walk in there, be afraid or be nervous. You know, same thing as a parent. I'm terrified. I have no clue what I'm doing. I'm going to try to take everyone's advice, do everything I can, still try to do it my own way. But again, I got to keep that, as much as all these thoughts, as much as all these irrational fears and everything else is comes into my head, I have to focus on what I can do and what I'm going to do and the actual outcome of the situation. Not just what my brain tells me is most likely going to happen.
Yes, you know? Because again, if you listen to your brain will have you out here out of pocket. Like things that you know and you've accepted and you know, believe and feel are going to happen, if you listen to your brain after one bad day, it's like, oh, everything you planned for is going to hell.
Right.
And I don't know how you're going to dig yourself out of hell, but your brain, it can be like your worst enemy sometimes. Like, it's literally just you.
But again, you had to grow to realize it. Yes. You have to let your brain go out there so you can realize that, yo, nah, I was tripping. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And to talk about that, it was just thinking about how me as a person was when I was a teenager versus how me as a person is now as about to be a 26-year-old mother. Like, there are some, like you said, there are things that I would not have been able to accept or to be able to overcome when I was 16. Like, just 10 years ago, when I was 16, there are some things that I just would not have been able to accept or overcome because I hadn't experienced enough and I hadn't grown enough and I hadn't been tested enough to say that I could confidently get through it, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. You don't really know. You don't know how strong you are. You don't know how, you know, it's just like, for example, all police officers, they get pepper sprayed or tased, you know, a lot of times in their training because, you know, it's not just because they dish it out. So they need to know it. But again, you don't, if you never experienced a tasing, you don't know how much is too much to kill someone. You don't know, you know what I'm saying? You don't know anything if you've never experienced it. You don't know how much pepper spray burn in the eyes. You probably could run, you know, go too far with certain stuff like this. So that's why they have to experience it. You have to go through it. You have to see it, you know. So again, that's the conversation. It's all about development. It's all about growth. And the thing is, that process never ends.
No.
And that's the beauty of it. And I think that's the thing. That's helped me understand even parenting, for example. I'm not going to be perfect. I may do things that are completely wrong by some other person's standard, or I'm doing it the right way, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. It's going to be our journey. Me, my child, all of it. You only get one shot at it. At first impressions, at your first born, you know, it's a lot of people that I know right now, older now, have their first born as an adult, and they're apologizing still for a lot of the things that they didn't know. Like, I'm learning too. Like, we're both learning on the fly. You know what I'm saying? So even though I'm 27, I'm not 17 like some people who had to become parents that young, or, you know, like you said, you're not 16. But we might as well be when it comes to this realm, because we're learning. We're fresh.
Baby deer.
You know? Exactly. So the way she's going to be learning and developing and figuring out how to exist and just, you know, make it in this world, we're all going to be learning together. We're going to learn about her. We're going to learn about parenting. We're going to just do it all together and come out on the other end smiling. You know, and I think that's the goal.
I agree. I'm going to leave this topic on just a couple of thought-provoking things. You've heard plenty, I know people have heard plenty of times that pressure or stress creates diamonds. And if you are a planter, you know that in order to make sure that your crop is hardy, you do have to introduce some stressors into the plant's life, because it can't all be peaches and cream. So stress promotes growth, and even though you stress right now, it's only going to lead to your growth in the future.
And like they said, any man or any woman should know this too, or at least take note of this. Anybody, any man knows this, or you've told, or you've at least been told this. If it was easy, it probably wouldn't worth it. And it's just simple as that. So what you can apply that to relationships. You can apply that to it. If it's just all of a free ride and easy, a lot of times those are not the things that hold up in our minds. The reason why we focus on the negative or on a lot of the traumatic in our brain is the reason why. It's because that's the things that stick to us, the hard things, the stuff that we had to fight to survive through. And that's what we're going to do. We're just going to fight.
I agree. Next week, we'll be back with another update on the New Japan Cup and then a huge life update. So stay tuned.
All right. Thank you guys for listening to the Mind of Monty podcast. I'm going to sign off. This was fun. Can't wait to talk about more New Japan Cup. And yeah, man, it's WrestleMania season. A lot of stuff is going to be creeping up on us in the coming weeks, but we're prepared, and I can't wait to just, again, be able to not one day. I don't know when. As a matter of fact, one of these pods throughout this year, she may even make her own appearance, whether we want it or not. But as eventually, she will be able to scream something into the microphone for you people, some gibberish. So I'm already looking forward to that day. Anyway, adios, arrivederci, adieu, 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 adieu.